to Where Brains Meet Beauty, hosted by Jody Katz, founder and creative director of Base Beauty Creative Agency.
Hi, Jody. How are you?
Hi, Eleni. Great to be here with you.
Great to be here. Tell me what's going on in your world. How was last week for you?
Well, last week I was at the Kisako Research Dermatological Beauty Connect event in Miami, and it was amazing. First of all, so many of our podcasts were there. Ron Robinson, Evelina Iosa, Dr. Portella, Alyssa Lask, Amy Schechter, Chris Payne. So it's always so fun to be at events and see so many podcast guests. So of course I took pictures with them all. And there were just so many incredible, fascinating people that I haven't met within the professional dermatology aesthetic space. So we made lots of new friends. Miami is amazing. I love it. I was happy to be back there. And I can't wait for this event next year.
That's so great. Kisako does such a great job of putting on these conversations with people in the room who really are experts in the space. And I feel like every time we're participating in them, we learn so much. You were involved in a panel as well, right? Tell us more about that.
I loved it. It was so much fun. Our panel was the first session on the first day. And we were talking about the new wave of dermatology retail. So Amy Schechter from Everybody was on the panel, along with Selena Cox, who's from CVS Health, and Penny Coy from Ulta Beauty. And, you know, three very different ways to retail skincare and services. And it was a very lively conversation. We only had 30 minutes to squeeze in all the learnings, but I really did take away a lot of knowledge from these three ladies.
Tell us one highlight if you had to pick one thing.
Well, you know, what I thought was really interesting is Ulta, you know, this like very big machine to move. I asked, how are they really educating their staff on all these updated trends, you know, the trends that are productive for our skin, but then there's the ones that are really dangerous or bizarre from TikTok. Mm-hmm. So they actually have these like mini trainings that they can put together in a week's time so that they can educate their staff to be like, you know, alert to these topics, prepare to answer questions, apply those trends to the products that are in store. And, you know, as we study trends as an agency at Base Beauty, we know it takes a long time to develop a point of view. So it's really amazing that they're able to pull this together in such a short amount of time.
That's incredible. That's so interesting. I hope to read more about that on LinkedIn.
You will.
Great. And you do a lot of panels, Jody. So I think our next episode actually is somebody that you met in a similar space. Is that right?
Yes. I met Devin at the Women's Wear Daily Beauty and Wellness Forum in New York. It was in September. And she was on the stage on a panel about wellness. And this is so cool. You know, I'm such a fan of LinkedIn. Before I go to events, I always LinkedIn and say hi to people that I know will be there. And I'd never met Devin before, but I know that she was speaking. So I LinkedIn and said hi to her, that I was looking forward to meeting her. And she LinkedIn back and said hi. So the event, you know, was an all-day event in New York. So after her panel, I wasn't sure if she was going to, you know, jet. Like a lot of people speak on their panels and they don't stay for the day. So I like literally chased after her after she came off the stage out into the hallway. And I introduced myself in person and asked her if she'd be on the show. And then what she told me, which is so sweet, is that she's a listener and she's been listening since the very beginning of her entrepreneurial journey, and that the content was super meaningful to her as she was, you know, dealing with the uncertainty of building a business. And that just like obviously gives me like crazy goosebumps.
That is so cool. It really is a full circle moment to hear that. I mean, we have the numbers, you know, we can see how many people open the emails and listen to the show, but hearing from people who actually learn from it is such a cool thing.
Yeah, it's a very strange phenomenon that we all live in where we put out content digitally and we hope it makes an impact on people and we hope that it creates value for them, but you just don't really know. And it's really easy to kind of forget that there's humans on the other side of all these digital devices, but meeting people in real life that love the show is so special to me.
That's amazing. Well, let's get to episode 253, Devin McGee Kirkland, co-founder and CEO of Dion Libra.
Welcome to Where Brains Meet Beauty. We are a career journey podcast talking about what it's like to define success and reach for it in the beauty and wellness industries. Today, we are continuing our C-Suite Wisdom Quarter with Devin McGee Kirkland, co-founder and CEO at Dion Libra. After her father passed away in 2018 from a massive heart attack brought on by stress,
She realized she had to make some lifestyle changes and started experimenting with natural stress solutions. Dion Libra is an adaptogenic beauty and wellness brand that launched its first products in November 2022 to help combat the effects of chronic stress, with research centered on how stress affects Black bodies. I'm excited to dive into the conversation about her career journey from Virgo visionary to Dion Libra, all on episode 253. Hi, Devin. Welcome to Where Brains Meet Beauty.
Hi, Jody. Thanks for having me.
So we are here together, and I just want to, before this interview begins, Devin, acknowledge that you made the sweetest Instagram post about your relationship with this show.
Yeah.
And like literally gave me goosebumps. So do you mind just sort of like paraphrasing what you wrote to your fans today?
Yeah. So when I started like building Dion Libra in 2020, I was in grad school. I was living in like a one bedroom apartment, and I felt like as a founder, I didn't know where to start. So I just started with podcasts, like listening to every beauty podcast I could find. And I feel like at the time there were only like two or three really popular ones, and yours was one of them. And so I'd start my mornings in the morning by like getting to my phone, turning on your podcast, and then going to make coffee and like checking emails and doing my homework. So it was really cool when you asked me to join, because it was a full circle moment for me. Like, I used to listen to this and listen to other founders, and here we are.
Yay. Well, the whole point of the show is to humanize our industry and to really make sure that all the stories are told, right? Like this fascinating stories don't just belong to the super famous people, right? Like, they belong to all of us. And I wanted a place where people could tell their fascinating stories. So thank you for agreeing to be a guest and for sharing that sentiment. Is really, like I said, a total goosebump moment for me. That, you know, people are listening. Yay, it's helpful. It's a resource and a service, and that's what I always wanted it to be.
We are definitely listening, so thank you for creating this platform.
So let's go way, way, way back before you were an entrepreneur. This is a career journey show, and for many of us, our career dreams start when we're very, very young. So go back to like 11-year-old self. What do you want to be when you grow up?
Girl, something so far removed from what I actually am. I thought I was going to be like the next Beyonce, and I cannot sing at all. Like, my poor mother put me in voice lessons and everything. Like, I could dance, but I could not sing. But that's what I really thought I was going to be. Like, I was writing music in my notebook in between classes and all types of things. But obviously, I'm not Beyonce Jr.
How long did this dream last? Like, is that like a elementary to middle school dream? And then you had a new dream in high school? Or like, you know, did you start your 20s thinking you're going to be on stage?
Yeah, I think it was really like elementary and like maybe into the beginning of middle school, but I was a competitive cheerleader. So like by the time I got to middle school, my whole life was just like cheer, 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 like cheer at school, cheer for travel. So I didn't really have time to think about like being Beyonce Jr. But I was always really into like my personal style. I felt like that was like my greatest form of expression. And so wanted to be in fashion and like express my creativity into design. But again, like nobody within my network did that, or nobody that I had personal access to did that. So I didn't really know where to start. So I kind of just like kept styling myself. I think I always tell people like I won best dressed in high school, senior superlatives, but we wore uniforms. So it was just like me styling up my school uniform and things like that. But I feel like at heart, if I look back on my journey and my dreams and desires as a child, like somewhere in there, like the one thing that's the common denominator is that I knew I was a creative, and I knew that like in order to keep my soul alive, like I had to keep creating.
Okay, let's talk about best dress with a school uniform. So how does personal style show up when you're limited to, I would assume it's like a polo shirt, maybe a sweater and a skirt and like tall socks?
Yeah, so like uniform days, I guess, when did I graduate high school? I feel so old. I graduated high school in 2008. And so like in the early 2000s, it was like that trend of wearing like a double polo shirt. So I would wear my Lacoste polo shirt under my uniform shirt and do the double collar thing. And then like once everybody started doing it, then the school was like, okay, enough. So I kind of got everybody in trouble with it, but it was cool. It was my own little personal style. And then like on game days, cheerleaders are required to wear their uniforms. And so my thing was like, screw wearing our cheerleading shoes. Like, I had matching black and gold Vans to match. I had like the perfect yellow gold Dolce and Gabbana shades that I was like wearing. I don't know who I thought I was, but I was wearing all of those little accessories just to like stand out and look different from everybody else.
Okay. So as cheerleaders in high school, like, were you putting like decorations in your hair? Cause that's like a classic cheer thing, right? To like match the hair to the uniform.
Yeah. But we have a required bow. At that time we had a required bow. So everybody had the same bow.
Okay. And was it required bow? I love the language of required bow. Is it very big?
Compared to cheer bows now, I would say no. Like, it was big enough because it was like the regular bow. So maybe the size and then like the little strings that hung down. But like cheer bows now are like the size of my head. And it's like, it's almost like a headpiece, not even a bow. I love that for the girls now, but it wasn't too big.
I was not a cheerleader, but I wish I could like have a bow in my hair all the time. Now I know I'd look ridiculous, but it just like makes me smile. Like there's something about the bow that like is so pleasant and joyful.
It's a thing, especially in cheer world. It's like when you go to competition, you're like scouting everybody's bow. Like, is her bow better than mine? Ill, their bows are ugly.
So the wellness industry is not exactly like cheer competition, but it is pretty competitive. Let's talk about the journey getting there. So you went to school to study film and TV, right?
Grad school. So, and I went to undergrad at UCF, go Knights. And there I just studied interdisciplinary studies because I'll be honest, couldn't really figure out exactly what I wanted to do, but it helped me study film, helped me study mass communication and a little bit of journalism and business. So I was able to like tap into all my interests and still graduate in 4 years. And then when I went to grad school, I really wanted to be a writer at the time. That is like my God-given gift. And so I was writing screenplays, and then my dad died in the middle of grad school. I think I was in my first year. And that was really it. I feel like once he died, my entire world just changed. Like, I didn't know what I wanted to do. I didn't know what to focus on. And then Dion Lieber happened.
So I guess there's a little bit of activity in between.
Yeah.
Point A and point B. So did you finish, were you able to finish graduate school?
I stayed in grad school into the pandemic. And regardless if you're on the writing side or on the filming side, you were required for your final project to film a short film. And we could not film a short film. So essentially I was supposed to have to stay in school like an additional year just in order to graduate. And I was like, screw that. Because I was building Dion Lieber at the same time. And as things started to pick up and we were winning grants and getting investment interest, I was like, it's not worth just paying for additional classes for no reason.
Okay. So how does one go from this like awful family tragedy to saying, I'm going to start a brand and name it after my dad? What was going on in your mind, and what did you have access to that inspired this?
Yeah, I think naturally I'm a giver and I'm a caretaker. And so the more I discover in anything, it could be clothes, it could be shoes, it could be food, it could be supplements, I share that usually on Instagram. And so as I was dealing with my own grief, there were like days where I wouldn't sleep for 72 hours, like straight. Like my wife would wake up and I'd be sobbing and she'd be like, what is wrong with you? And have you been asleep? Like not even a nap. And so I typed in Google one day, natural stress solutions, and adaptogens came up. I had no idea what they are. So for people who don't know what they are non-psychedelic mushrooms, herbs, and roots that when you consume them, they help your body regulate your cortisol levels. And so I started with ashwagandha, which is what I call the basic B. We all know what that word means, adaptogen, because most people know what it is. They just don't know that it is an adaptogen. And within like 2 weeks, I was sleeping. I had mental clarity. I could focus. I felt better. My anxiety had decreased. And so I'm a nerd. I just went down this rabbit hole of like, what are these things? And like, why hasn't anybody ever taught me this? And so as I started researching adaptogens and stress and how it affects Black people specifically, I came across a sleep study that was studying Black people and white people sleeping. And what they concluded is that when Black people sleeping, we are not truly at rest because our heart rate and our blood pressure doesn't drop to the normal rate of a sleeping human. And so like what was happening to me through my grief and my trauma made sense to me. What happened to my dad made sense to me. And so I looked at my wife, who was my fiance at the time, and I was like, why the hell isn't anybody teaching Black people this? Like, it's easier to keep us sick with diabetes, heart disease, and keep us on medication so that they can make money off of our illnesses. And that's for all people, not just Black people. But we have the least amount of access to those resources. And when I started looking at the wellness industry holistically, there were a few things that stuck out to me, and that it was that wellness is very white, it's very feminine, and very skinny. And if nobody was going to provide the access just to the education, not even the products, as far as adaptogens are concerned, like, why not me? I feel like a lot of times founders get stuck on, oh, I don't know enough, or I haven't been doing this long enough. Like, if you care enough, you can figure it out.
So this is a lot of learning in one moment, and obviously, like, you know, kind of a moment of desperation, right? You're not sleeping. Like, our bodies can't function without sleep, right? Our brains go to mush. All this is happening in your life, and you're thinking, I can create access to this information for people like me who don't know this and never heard of an adaptogen and are really struggling. But turning that into a business is like a completely different beast. So how did you get from this information needs to get out there to I'm going to turn this into a company?
So in 2021, on my dad's death anniversary, so February 17th, we launched with an editorial website, which we just consider like a digital safe space for Black people. So we post everything from like healthy recipes to, my wife is a retired basketball player and a CrossFitter, so to like her 5-minute ab workout, to playlists. We interview people within our communities. So like Elle Moxley, who's an activist, like we interview her and just talk about things that she enjoys and lets her create playlists. And we really just wanted to spark, you know, what we call like Black joy. So there's an area called Big Fun. I think a lot of times the media that Black people consume is negative most of the time or traumatic. And so we wanted that digital safe space for people to be able to learn and have access to those wellness resources. Because I think a lot of time we assume people know, you know, like if you just eat less calories or you eat more vegetables, and like people don't have access to all those things that may come natural to us. And it's a privilege to be able to have access to those resources and that information. And so it was really important for us to start there. Like, it's totally free. Like, you don't have to pay for subscription. And that was our way of giving back. And when people started showing interest in that and people wanted to be a part of that, we were like, okay, education first, the website, editorial, and product second. And then we still haven't done phase three yet, which is in real life experience.
While you're putting this together, grieving, do you have a day job?
I was still in grad school. So at that point, I was still in grad school, and I had not made the decision to walk away yet. And really the deciding factor for me was Glossier made this Black beauty business grant, and I had built the Glossier Brown community for Glossier years ago on Instagram. And I was like, I know I don't have any products. I know I don't have anything, but they were one of the only grants at that time that offered grants for pre-launch businesses. And so I looked at Brit because I had talked to other founder friends, especially Black female founder friends that were like, they're going to want you to have a co-founder. Most people aren't going to invest without a co-founder. And I felt like your co-founder is like your partner, your non-romantic partner, but like you were married. It's basically a marriage. And so who better than to ask her, who had the wellness experience already. She's a former SoulCycle instructor, retired basketball player, Hall of Famer. And I was like, why not? So I asked her, she said yes. And I said, okay, we're going to shoot our shot. We're going to apply for the grant. And if we get it, then we're going to do this. And I think out of like 10,000 applications, they chose 16 businesses. And we were one of the 4 pre-launch companies.
That's amazing.
Thank you.
So let's talk about, I guess, like courage or confidence. Because there's the ambition to do something that, you know, maybe you haven't seen done before, or something that you want to do for yourself. Then there's the follow through. But then there's that the feeling. Is it self-doubt? Is it assurance? Like, were you moving through the world with sort of this like confidence that like I can make anything happen that I think of? Or were you in a less sort of like confident space?
I think I was moving through the world that way. So my mother will tell you I've always been that way since I was a child. Like, if you want to put me in a purple dress and I want to wear a black dress, like today we're wearing a black dress because I don't want to wear a purple dress. That's a simplified version of that. But at that time, I was moving through the world with confidence and ambition. And, you know, I think for me, grief really puts things in perspective. So like losing somebody, like a parent, puts things in perspective for a lot of people. But for me, for a period in my life, I felt like I was invincible, not like jump off a building and I'm going to fly invincible, but like, what is there to lose? I've already lost my father. And so I think at that point, it was like, I can do anything. Like, who's going to stop me? I will say my founder's journey has kind of reversed that a little bit. I think you take a lot of beatings as a founder. You hear a lot of no's. You hear a lot of that's not possible. You hear a lot of that's not going to work. And so I can be honest and say, like, my confidence has definitely taken a little bit of a hit as a founder. But I've always moved through the world that way.
Okay. So I just want to put this in perspective. You are building this, you got the grant, which is like wild. Like that's, I guess the numbers were against you, right? 10,000 applicants, 16 opportunities only. You're in a period of grief and you're starting this business. Had you ever actually had like a job outside of influencing at this point in your career?
Oh yeah. I worked in corporate from the time I graduated until the time I went to grad school. I worked in corporate sales and I hated it. It's just not me. It's not my personality. I think, in my opinion, not all places, but in the places that I've worked, there's a lot of like undercutting people. And I'm a part of like what I refer to as like good human alliance. Like I always try to do the right thing to the best of my ability. And so it just made me really uncomfortable to like try to undercut someone, to try to do something, to make numbers and things like that just don't make sense to me. So I knew that wasn't a fit, but I feel like in corporate, once you get put on like the sales track, you have a hard time transitioning to other departments because I feel like everybody's trying to get in sales and I was trying to get out. And so when I left corporate, I went and worked in retail. I worked at the Henry Bindle store. I had opened that store in college in Orlando, and then the one here in Atlanta was hiring for another manager, and I did that. And to me, it's just like mindless work. It's very easy. Like it's physical labor. You open your packages, you greet, you sell, and it came natural to me. So it was a pay cut, but it was much less stress on my body and like all the health challenges that I was having when I was working in corporate. Like I didn't have that anymore. And so to me, my health and like my sanity were more important than making six figures in a sales job that I hated.
Okay, let's identify one thing you learned that you still take with you from the corporate sales job. Like something like a positive learning. One, just one.
A positive, just one. You know, I think it's really important to me to be upfront with your customers. I notice a lot of times in sales that in order to get the sale or close the deal, people will tell little lies, but little lies lead to big lies. And as I'm like sitting next to a coworker in my cubicle and I'm like, girl, I know we can't do that, but okay, girl, get your money. You know, it just taught me, you know, to always be honest. So even with Dion Libra, like if I know we're going to run out of inventory for something, when we get to that point, I'm going to say it, like, just so you know, we're going to run out. It's going to take us a little bit to get it back. And I think that's really important. I think people really underestimate the truth. Even if it's like a little truth, people underestimate the power of the truth.
I love that learning. What a great time in your life to acquire that, right? Really early in your career, right out of college. First of all, I love looking at challenges as opportunities, right? So I knew there'd be a great learning in there. And any of the jobs that I've had in my career or bosses who were not palatable, it taught me how I wanted to show up in the world, right? Just like this taught you how you want to show up in the world for your customers. And I think of all the jobs, it's like they go into my backpack and it's like my backpack of experience. And so they're not forever, but they're like, they're helping me have tools.
Yep.
Right. So all of that mishigas, I'll call it, with the competitive cutthroat line, all that stuff influences how you're showing up in the world today and probably how you were able to, you know, beat the pack of 10,000 applicants for 16 spots, right? So there's value in taking a job, even if it's not the job, right?
Yeah. I think my dad told me a long time ago, like, you will learn from friends, family, coworkers, bosses, more of how not to be than how to be. And I think we overlook that a lot of times. I think it's more important to like take your pain and challenges and look at them as like, okay, what is the opportunity? Like, how can I learn from this? And like, now I know when I'm a leader, don't do this to people.
That's another reason why I like doing this show, because we get to talk about the truth. You know, there are going to be people that we all work with who don't share the same value system as us.
Yeah.
It's very taxing to work with people that, like you said, in the case of the corporate job, were like literally lying, right? They had, it was a means to an end for them, but it was going to have a big implication later on for that customer.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about this quote that you shared with my team, forever doing it scared. What does that mean?
You know, I have horrible anxiety, I'll be honest. I was like in the shower, like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm doing this today about anything. I don't know. I psych myself out before I get there most of the times. It's probably like my biggest area of opportunity internally. But I've learned in my years or over my founder's journey that like nobody has all the answers and nobody always knows exactly what they're doing. And like there are going to be moments in life and in business that are uncomfortable for you or where you're not the expert, you're the novice. And so I just always try to encourage people, including myself, to do it scared. Like it's not always going to feel good. You're not always going to have all the tools and all the armor, but like you'll gather all of that along the way. It's kind of like what you said about your backpack of experience. It's the same thing. And so when I feel like I'm about to psych myself out of something or an idea, I have to remind myself, like, do it scared. Because like it could go up, it could go down, but it'll never go up if you don't even try. So you have to attempt.
I love that. So tell me about like what's actually happening in your body when you're having this sort of like your body is trying to psych yourself out as your mind is trying to psych yourself up. Like, is it, you know, are you shaking? Is your stomach hurt? You know,
I have the most sensitive stomach. It's my stomach. So like full transparency, like I didn't even eat today. Before this, I'll eat after this, because I know my body. It's not necessarily the healthiest choice, but I know myself. So I just won't eat before certain events, or I won't consume coffee before certain events if I don't have a certain amount of time between my morning and the event. But it's definitely my stomach, or me just thinking of everything under the sun that could go wrong, which is like the worst habit to have. But I feel like I can admit this a little bit. It stays here. The Virgo in me is like a little bit of a control freak. And so I want to know every scenario before I do anything, because that way I can either fix it or prevent it, which is impossible in the human world. So
I know it's really hard to like rationalize the fear, but I want you to know that like nothing could go wrong here.
Oh, thank you.
You know, I mean it. Like, even if you're like, oh, the tech's not working, we'd reschedule, right? Like, if the, you know, the internet crashes in your town, we'd reschedule. If the, you know, the screen gets all wobbly, sometimes the connection's not great, we'll close it out and start again. So I just want you to know in this space, and it's probably similar in other places, even if there's obstacles, nothing's really going wrong.
I appreciate that. I really do. Thank you, Jody.
I want to talk about the visceral reaction to, I'll call opportunities, because when I set goals for myself, and it could be very long-term goals, eventually I'm going to reach them. Like this is, I've proven this to myself, right? Like I have evidence now to believe in myself, but every single time I get closer and closer to the dream, my body gets like, I don't call it like shaky, but vibration-y, like I vibrate. And I have really epic theatrical dreams, like kind of like Marvel movie kind of style, like just like so much adventure. And it's my body is like so scared to actually like reach the goal because it felt so insurmountable whenever I dreamed it up. And my wrists will get all like tingly, my arms will, and my hands will get tingly, and my heart will race more. And now that I have evidence of what's on the other side, I'm able to like get excited about that feeling. But it used to be really, really intense and scary because I didn't know that good was coming.
Yeah. I think.
But now I know.
I think like losing, when I lost my dad, not that bad things had never happened before, but nothing that intense had happened before. And so for me, I did realize like I was able to pinpoint like the negative and the anxiety started when I lost him, because it almost feels like at any moment anything can be taken from me. So that's like something internally, like I am working through, because it doesn't mean because you lost one really great thing in your life that you're going to lose everything great. So I struggle with that. Like when we have a win, like I'm excited for like 2 seconds, and then it's like, oh, but dad's gone. And so I have to work through that. Like just because you lost him doesn't mean you're going to lose everything good you touch.
Yeah, that's a lot of hard work you have to do here, right? I hope that you find a way to celebrate all the little wins, because that will buoy you, right? Like, you know, it's not going to replace him.
Yeah.
Right? So that reality exists, but you do amazing things every day and wonderful things happen to you and around you every day.
Thank you.
And celebrating those even in a small way, I think, has the potential to give you like a little bit of a life raft.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about success, because you started this business to try to ease stress.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say being an ambitious entrepreneur is a great way to avoid stress.
No, girl, I'm the most stressed out person I know.
Okay, so you started this business to get out the stress and relieve yourself, and now you're in a situation where different types of stress come at you every day. And what are you doing in your life outside of work, which is helping other people with their stress? What are you doing for you?
So I will admit, and I tell everybody, like, at this stage in my life, I'm more of a, like, do as I say, not as I do, because my self-care has, like, completely diminished from what it used to be. But for me, it's just, like, really finding time to spend with my wife, like, outside of work, because we're together right now. Like, she's literally right there. And so we're together all the time, but I think people think we spend a lot of time together because we work together, and we don't get to spend a lot of time together. So for me, it's like, can we do dinner, even if it's just once a week? Like, can we look at each other? And I think we've gotten a lot better of doing this to each other at like 8 o'clock and be like, yo, close your MacBook. Like, it's time to like watch Love is Blind, which is like, oh, Love is Blind is out today. I have to watch it. But watch Love is Blind and like do things that remove us from the work world, because we do work within our house, in our warehouse, and that's it. And so like 98% of our time is spent in the same space. We're supposed to eat here, work here, rest here, work out here. And so really just like learning to maybe not physically pull ourselves out of our work environment, but like mentally pull ourselves out of our work environment. So like our biggest thing now is like, let's go eat. Once a week, we go to dinner. Even if we're like dog tired, we have to go to dinner. And then like earlier this week, it's gotten warmer in Atlanta, so we go for hot girl walks.
Okay, what is a hot girl walk?
Who started that? I think Meg Thee Stallion started like a hot girl walk. And it's just like what you call going on a stroll as a form of exercise.
Okay, but it's not me looking hot as I walk.
No.
No, so I could be a sweaty mess.
And you can be a sweaty mess and go on a hot girl walk.
Okay, got it.
Hot girls are sweaty.
Okay, so you're in a really challenging time in this business where you're living and working in the same place you're living and working in, right? And that's going to change, right? The business is going to grow and you won't be working as much from home. But you are a human and not a robot. I want to remind you of that.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
But it's hard because the work is fun, right? So it is an adventure.
Yeah, most times. Most times the work is fun. It's very stressful, but most times. But it is hard, especially like I'm a night owl. So like sometimes we should be winding down and at like 11, I'm like, ooh, we need to talk through this right now. Mm-hmm. And I've had to learn to be like, do you have the capacity? Do you want to talk about work? And sometimes that one conversation leads to like an all-nighter where we're up till 4 a.m. But I've had to learn to turn that off. Like tomorrow will hopefully come. And there's time to work through whatever this idea is. So I write things down everywhere all day.
I love it. So I want to just let everyone know we're wrapping up our interview segment. So thank you, Devin, for your honest answers and sharing your wisdom.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. I have a bunch of fan questions for you. We can probably get to 2 or 3 of them.
Cool.
Okay. This is actually a really important question and I wouldn't know the answer. How does one start out using adaptogens, like picking adaptogens and, you know, using them?
For me, I feel like do your research. I started with Google, and then once I realized it was something that I was really into, I went on Amazon and I found a whole bunch of books. There's really big books, like there's one that's like 600 pages I call my Adaptogen Bible, and then there's books that are like 100 pages that kind of give you some recipes in the back to help you, but they also explain all the benefits. So I think that's really helpful, and then you can always DM me or ask me. I'll help you too.
I love that. Okay, so Ness is asking, did you bootstrap your business or do you have investors?
I have investors, and I knew very early on, just because of the brand and the aesthetic that we were trying to build, it wasn't going to be something that I could bootstrap. And so we started with the friends and family round in the middle of the pandemic. And I always tell founders, specifically Black founders, because we always feel like our friends and family like don't have any extra income to, you know, invest, ask, like, shoot your shot. I didn't exclude anybody. I asked everybody, and some of the people that I thought would have no funds to invest were like the first people to like send the wire and write the check. So we did friends and family and then angels after that.
This is actually a really, I guess, loaded question. What's one piece of advice you would give to somebody just starting out as an entrepreneur?
Trust your gut. Like, it sounds so cliche, but all of the mistakes that I've made on the journey, and I wouldn't even fully call them mistakes, like all of the lessons that I've learned were because I didn't go with my first instinct. Like, I thought there was an expert that knew a little bit more than I did. And I was like, well, they've been doing this 10 years. I've been doing it for, I'm going to like take their advice and run with that. And it was just not the right decision. So trust your gut. I think it's easier to swallow the challenges and the mess ups when it was something that came from you. So I always say, like, if I made the decision, I can eat that if it goes wrong, because I felt like that was what was best for us at the time. And I did with what I could with the knowledge that I had. But it's a lot harder to swallow when you took somebody's advice and ran with that and you already had doubt. Like, so now if there's even like an inkling of doubt, you know, in mentorship or advice, I'm like, yeah, I'm not doing that.
That is very good advice. Trusting your gut can be a scary, lonely place.
It is. But I feel like the best comes out of that.
Right. That's why you're you. Mm-hmm. Well, this has been so much fun, Devin. Thank you so much. This was our 253rd episode. So thank you for being a part of our show.
Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you. I'm so grateful that I got to meet you at that Women's Wear Daily event. That was like almost half a year ago, I think, at this point, right?
Yep. Almost September. I'm so glad you found me. Like, when you walked away, I had a little fangirl moment and my wife was like, who is she? And I'm like, you have no idea. I used to listen to that podcast all the time. So thank you. I really do appreciate you having me.
I do want to acknowledge that LinkedIn plays a role here, because I saw that you were going to be at the event, right? Because like in the collateral, it tells you who's going to be speaking. And I always make an effort to like say hi to people on LinkedIn beforehand, because like you just don't know that you're going to have time to actually greet everybody in person. The circumstances of, you know, people having to, you know, leave or come late or whatever. So I messaged you on LinkedIn and you messaged me back. Mm-hmm. And then I was able to chase after you walked off the stage. And I'm really glad, because like sometimes I feel like, you know, should I make an effort? Will they respond? You know, like all the same stuff. So you were giving me more evidence that I should just always reach out, say hello.
Do it scared.
Yes, I love that. Okay, so thank you so much for joining us. If you like this episode, please rate and review. As always, make sure you're following us on your favorite podcast platform and Instagram to stay up to date on upcoming episodes and all the fun we have along the way. Thank you. Yay, we did it. You did great. Now go eat.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Where Brains Meet Beauty with Jodi Katz. Tune in again for more authentic conversations with beauty leaders.